Goodreads, you have let me down. A rating of 4.53? Seriously? I disagree. Hi, you're listening to Write From Karen. My name's Karen. This podcast is about a little bit of everything. My life, my writing, book reviews, politics, and religion. Grab a cup of coffee and get comfortable. I have a lot to say about nothing. So remember last week when I told you that I typically agree with Goodreads, with the reviews, the ratings on Goodreads? Well, I found the exception to the rule. I just finished a book. It's called Scorned by Carrie Kaya. And Goodreads reviews rated it 4.53. So I thought, all right, this is going to be awesome. It's going to be a good read. And it's a picture of a woman with a bitch face. And of course, you know, with it being titled Scorn, I'm thinking, okay, it's a woman scorned story. This will be good. Okay. I would have to disagree. Let me read you a little bit of the first chapter and then I'll tell you my rating and what I thought about it. All right, this is from Scorned by Carrie Kaya, Chapter 1. In the car park of a disused public house on the border of Essex and Suffolk, Tommy Carter had parked his Range Rover. He flicked the switch for the windscreen wipers. Despite the onset of a light drizzle, it wasn't a particularly cold evening, and he wound down the driver's side window a few inches to let in some air and to help clear the condensation that had built up on the windscreen and passengers' windows. "I can see fuck all," he complained, taking the sleeve of his jacket and wiping it across the glass. "They should be here by now, should they?" Tommy glanced down at the clock on the dashboard. "Yeah, they're 10 or so minutes late." He continued wiping down the window. "They'd better get a move on. I've got a table booked at 8, and if I'm late, Stace will have my guts." He paused before looking across at his brother, Jimmy, the second eldest of the Carter brothers. "We're meeting our Karen's new bloke tonight. She booked a restaurant and everything." Jimmy raised his eyebrows. "Must be serious then, bruh." "Depends." "On what?" Gary Carter asked as he shifted his weight against the cramped confines of the back seat. Glancing in the rearview mirror at his brother, Tommy gave a chuckle. "On whether I like the geezer or not." He took note of the expression of contempt that spread across his brother's face, and his voice became serious. "What? Do you really expect me to allow my daughter to get herself involved with a complete numpty? If I don't like him, he's out the door." Jimmy began to laugh. "I almost feel sorry for the bloke." "Yeah, well, we'll see." Tommy glanced down at the clock for a second time. "Where the fuck are they?" "What if they don't turn up?" Tommy turned to look at his youngest brother, Johnny. Sat beside Gary, the brothers' shoulders were practically touching as they had squeezed themselves inside the car alongside the two remaining Carter brothers, Sonny and Mitchell. "They'll turn up," Tommy said. The fact that Johnny was the cause of them having to do this job was at the forefront of his mind, and he spat out the words. "Yeah, but what if they don't?" "I said they'll turn up. McKay has sorted everything out at his end." Tommy turned in his seat once more to give his younger brother a cold stare. "And I'm warning you now. You best buck your ideas up. You're the reason we're in this mess." "I said I'm sorry." Johnny rolled his eyes. "What more do you want me to say?" Reaching across the seat, Tommy grabbed a handful of his brother's shirt in his fist. "Don't start getting cocky with me, bruh. Seriously, I mean it. I'm not in the mood for you and your shit today." "Leave him," Jimmy said, pulling his elder brother back onto the driver's seat. "Right now isn't the time, is it?" His eyebrows were raised as he nodded his head toward the Land Rover pulling into the car park. Tommy stabbed his finger toward his youngest brother and took deep, steady breaths to keep his temper in check. "I'll deal with you later," he warned. Fighting the urge to not roll his eyes for a second time, Johnny kept his mouth firmly closed. They all knew better than to antagonize their elder brother. Tommy had a fierce temper at the best of times, and it didn't take much for him to lose his rag. "This is it," Tommy stated, turning back in his seat. He opened the car door, climbed out, and waited for his five younger brothers to follow suit, then checked the fob on the central locking system, ensuring the doors were fully locked. He had a nice car. It was worth a fair few bob. and the last thing they needed was for the car to end up being stolen whilst they tried to make a getaway. So that's an excerpt from chapter one. So basically, you can kind of tell by the language that this is written like in a British kind of place, Cockney accent, that kind of thing. And basically, it's a story about a family, and it's, I want to say it's like kind of a mobster family, even though they don't really deal directly with the mob, but their mentality, they're basic thieves. They steal and do jobs for a living. It's a large family and there are a lot of characters, and there were several times I got completely lost and a little disgusted trying to keep up with it all, and I put it down nearly twice just because of the sheer amount of characters in this novel, and it was all over the place. We continuously head hopped from one character to the next, and it got to the point where I wasn't really sure what the story was about. So after reading it, completing the story, I didn't hate it. I certainly didn't love it. And from what I can gather, the story is about this family. Well, there's a couple of different things. Honestly, a couple of storylines running parallel to each other. And then at the end, they finally collide. It is about a woman who was scorned, but it's not solely about that story. It's also about family betrayals, and I guess you could say the main character, Tommy, was scorned by a member of his family as well. So I guess shame on me for assuming it was going to be solely about a woman's story of being scorned, but it was much more than that. And it wasn't a bad story. There's a lot of language in this book, which I'm no prude, trust me. In fact, I have quite the dirty potty mouth myself, and I drop the F-bomb quite a bit, but the sheer number of F-bombs in this book was overkill, in my opinion, even though I understand where the author was coming from in trying to be true to her characters, because they're kind of tough and rumble, you know, gangsters, basically, who talk like that, and you want to stay true to that character. It was unnecessary a lot of times, in my opinion. The writing itself was fine. Again, it wasn't the greatest, but again, it was told from so many different viewpoints, and I was in so many people's heads that I just kind of lost interest, to be honest. And after even finishing the book, I'm still not entirely sure what the family tree looks like, because it was all over the place and there were so many characters. And also, the motivation behind the characters to do what they did, to me, felt weak. It didn't feel strong enough to justify some of their reactions, like Tommy losing his temper at the drop of a hat. And maybe there are some people out there, I don't know, but to me, it felt like it was contrived and forced. So I wasn't the biggest fan. The ending, I mean, you feel justified. The bad guys do get it. But again, it felt overkill and a little over the top to me. But I think the author kind of painted herself in a corner. So you needed justice and you wanted to have a big justice. You wanted to have a big payoff, but it was almost too big, if that makes sense. Ultimately, I gave it 2 stars. I was disappointed. It was too much head hopping, too many characters all over the place. I honestly didn't care at that point what happened to these characters. And so I'm a little disappointed. And this doesn't happen very often with Goodreads, that I widely disagree with the overall amount of stars that a book gets, but I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, if you're into the mobster stuff, okay, go for it, I guess. But I personally am not a fan and I wouldn't recommend it. Now, moving on to that, I did read another book this week that I thought was decent. It was called, let me pull it up real fast, Bring Up the Bodies by Hilary Mantel. And this book was about Anne Boleyn. Boy, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Back in King Henry days, we all know the history of that. You know, he beheaded her for her betrayal, her potential, her supposedly cheating on the king. And this was told from the perspective of Thomas Cromwell, who was the king's secretary. And if you know anything about this history, I personally like this time period. I've read a lot of stories from this time period, so I was automatically interested in the story. If you remember from that time period, King Henry got rid of his first wife, Catherine, and I think basically he just became bored with her. And this fresh young thing came along, and she was mysterious, and she was flirtatious, and she was challenging. So he somehow justified to the Catholic Church that his marriage to Catherine was bogus or not official or something along those lines. Because, you know, back then they couldn't get a divorce that was against the Catholic religion. So he made up some excuse to get rid of Catherine. Then he married Anne. Well, that only lasted a few years before Anne started getting on his nerves. She was combative. She was just too much of a pain in the ass for him to deal with. So he wanted to get rid of her. So he told Thomas, hey, I want to get rid of her. I've got my eye on this new young thing. Her name's Jane Seymour. I want to make her my next queen. But I need to get rid of Anne. So they came up with the idea that, you know, Anne wasn't really officially the queen, and he wasn't necessarily completely rid of Catherine, the first queen. The people did not accept Anne, so it made it easy for the people in the realm to agree with the king that she wasn't the true queen. And in order to get rid of her, they came up with all kinds of ideas on, you know, she's been having affairs with this person and this person and this person. And they brought these men in, and they didn't really dispute it. I mean, they denied it, but because of some of the things they've said in the past, they, you know, were kind of basically painted guilty. So anyway, that's the crux of the story. And we all know what happens. These men die, they're beheaded. And then of course, Anne is also beheaded. And that's no big surprise. The story was very compact and detailed oriented. It was hard to follow along. Hillary did a very good job, historically speaking. It sounded like it was, you know, read historically accurate. It was an interesting decision to tell this story from Thomas's point of view. So, I mean, it was, oh my gosh. I mean, when you start a book and there's a family tree for several families at the beginning of the book, which is what this book had, you know, you're kind of in trouble. So keeping all these characters straight and their relationship to the king and all that was very challenging. And, but she does a pretty good job of kind of keeping it straight. So, I end up giving it 4 stars. But honestly, I think I would rather give it 3 stars just because the writing was so convoluted and not very clear at times. It's almost as if Hillary spent more energy on the historical accuracies and the politics and the language of this time period as opposed to the story. But then again, I kind of understand why she would go that route, because everybody knows the story of Anne already. So I think maybe she was just trying to give it a little bit of a fresh perspective. And because of that, I gave it 4 stars for her effort, if nothing else, because I'm sure it was a challenge to write. So personally, I give it 3 stars, but because of the way it's structured and so much research has gone into the story, that I'm giving it 4 stars. So if you like that historical stuff, then you would probably enjoy this story, this book. So switching gears for a minute, I need some transition music or some kind of transition noise whenever I'm transitioning from subject to subject. So don't be surprised if you hear that in the next podcast. I'm going to talk about my own writing at this point. Unfortunately, I didn't get a whole lot done this past week. And when I say I didn't get a whole lot done, that means I got like nothing done. Zero, which I'm kind of ashamed to admit. And, you know, here it is, mid-October, and I'm still really nowhere close to being prepared for my NaNoWriMo project next month. But I got distracted by the confirmation hearings of Amy Coney Barrett. I know that probably sounds so boring and dry to you guys that are not politically inclined at all, but I found myself pretty fascinated with the whole process, and I think it largely stems from the fact that I really enjoy law, and in another life, and if I were younger, I might have seriously pursued a career in law, like as a law clerk or a paralegal. I kind of think I've missed my calling in some respects because it interests me, and I feel like I would have been good at it because I really enjoy research, and of course I like writing. My Bachelor of Science degree is in technical writing, so that aspect of writing has always kind of interested me. So I think that's one reason why I was so interested in the confirmation hearings of Judge Barrett. I've never really watched them in the past, these confirmation hearings. I've, you know, seen the sound bites and the clips and everything from previous hearings. And of course, the Democrats treated Judge Kavanaugh just terribly and just basically raked him over the coals and destroyed some of his reputation for really no reason because their accusations proved false. You know, they were trying to accuse him of, you know, sexual assault and gang rape and all these other terrible things that ended up being not true at all, just because they didn't want him on the Supreme Court because of his conservative views. They had to stoop to mudslinging and, well, doing what they do best, to be honest, which is just wallow in the mud and mudsling. But they found themselves in a unique position with Judge Barrett because she's a woman with 7 children and she's a devout Catholic. So they weren't quite sure what to do with her. And I think that might have been one of the reasons why they weren't as nasty to her as they were during Judge Kavanaugh's confirmation hearings. I ended up watching the entire 11 hours on the second day of the confirmation hearings. Now, obviously, I didn't watch it all in one take. It took me 3 days to get through those 11 hours. But it was so fascinating to me, not the topic itself, because that was pretty dry, but in how it was approached and how it was debated, per se. And I say that because it wasn't really, well, I guess it was debated, but it was debated in a kind of a sly, sneaky way. Let me explain. So I don't know if you're familiar with the confirmation hearings and how it's structured. I wasn't until I watched this, and I don't know if other confirmations are structured the same way, but this particular confirmation hearing was structured so that one Republican senator had 30 minutes to ask his or her questions, and then a Democratic senator had his or her chance to ask questions as well, and another 30 minutes. So it was kind of a ping pong effect between both sides, and it was really interesting to see how they would approach their line of questioning and how they would treat Judge Barrett. Now, just a little bit of background for those of you that don't know, Judge Barrett is an esteemed judge. She graduated from Notre Dame. She ended up being a law professor at Notre Dame for a number of years. And her students and staff loved her. They wrote highly, you know, impressive letters of recommendation for her. And she earned several awards that were apparently hard to obtain in the career of law. And then she ended up going through, I think, some confirmation hearings a couple of years ago to become an active sitting judge for the Seventh Circuit. And that's where she is now. She's still an active judge, and that's her job. So now that they're trying to put her on the Supreme Court, you know, it's a little, the, the stakes were a little higher because, you know, she's a devout Catholic, she's a conservative, and of course the Democrats are scared that she's going to end up favoring any conservative outcomes on future disputes. So it was interesting to see them approach her. For instance, the Republican senators would ask her questions, but they were questions specifically on, can you explain your views in interpreting the law? Can you explain what this means in the law? Can you explain what an originalist and a textualist is? And, you know, that kind of thing. And they would ask questions on her past rulings and her past papers and things like that. I learned a lot, actually, by listening to them ask her these questions as far as the role of a justice, of a, you know, Supreme Court justice. I didn't know this, and I'm betting a lot of you don't know this, but the role of a Supreme Court justice is not to make laws. Now, I kind of thought it was. I thought that they were supposed to ultimately decide on a law that's presented to them, and then from that point forward, we go forward with that ruling. So let's say, for example, if she wanted to rule against abortion and all of a sudden null and void the abortion law, then, you know, we wouldn't be able to legally have abortions from that point forward. That's kind of where I was coming from on what a justice, a Supreme Court justice, does. But that is not at all what they do. So a Supreme Court justice's job is to rule on existing law and to interpret the law and apply and enforce the law according to precedent, which means previous laws, and the Constitution. And she's an originalist in the fact that she likes to go back to the original writings of the Constitution and interpret what the founders meant by writing certain aspects, of the Constitution, of course, the amendments thereafter. So as Judge Barrett had to explain numerous times, to the point where it's like, are you people not listening at all? She said that she would, so I guess how it works is you have cases, and then if that case is disputed, then it goes up to the appellate court, and it keeps kind of going up the chain of command until finally it presents itself to the Supreme Court for the ultimate decision on interpretation, basically, of the law that is presented to them. Now, they have several cases that are presented to the Supreme Court justice, but they only look at maybe 80 cases out of 2,000 that could be presented to them in any given year. So they're very select on the cases that they choose to look at in depth and put under a microscope, basically, and interpret it according to the law that it represents. Because as Justice Barrett kept saying, you know, we don't make the laws, we interpret the laws that you, meaning Congress, make. So that was really interesting that I did not know that. And it makes a lot of sense now that I do know it. But she had to keep saying that continuously. And here's why. Because the Democratic senators spent the majority of their time trying to trick her into, to commit to giving her opinion on hypothetical situations. And she kept saying over and over again that she couldn't give a thumbs up or a thumbs down on the situation because it was hypothetical and it wasn't a true case that was coming before her. So I guess Justice Ginsburg, a while back, made another ruling as far as the behavior of a Supreme Court justice that they are not allowed to give their opinion on a hypothetical case because it's a violation of ethics, which makes sense because, unless it's a real case, that so there's so many variables, it's hard to give a hypothetical ruling on something that hasn't happened. So it frustrated the Democrat senators greatly that she would never commit to saying yay or nay, whether she would be for or against abortion, for or against the ACA, the American Care Act, commonly known as Obamacare, And see, there was another hot topic too. I'll think of it in a minute, but they were just solely focused on these hot topics. And the way they approached it was not only were they trying to trap her into committing an answer to a hypothetical case that she couldn't comment on because it would be a violation of her oath, they would also present these posters of like gay couples or family that, you know, one of the kids has a pre-existing condition, and they were trying to play on her emotions and keep saying, well, how can you let these poor people suffer, you know, by ruling against them or not allowing them to have the health care they need to live their lives? And, you know, how could you be heartless, basically, is what they were implying by not ruling for these poor individuals that need our help. It was a pathetic ploy, but I wasn't surprised. And then Senator Hirano, I think that's how you pronounce her name. I think she's from Hawaii, was one of the most aggressive senators in her questioning. And she was talking because, you know, Judge Barrett's answers would be, well, because of the precedent, I can't do this, or the precedent would require me to do this. And Senator Hirano kept saying, you know, well, you know, real life, these are real life situations. These are real life people. And she said that you can't, ultimately, these precedents impact individuals, you know, that in real lives. So in essence, stop saying precedents and give me a human answer. What would you do as a human, you know, in these situations? And again, Judge Barrett cannot answer that. And it was satisfying to see the Democrats being so frustrated with her answers, because they're so used to getting their way that when they don't, they just become petulant and like children. And it was pretty satisfying to see her responses to them trying to trick her. And then another interesting aspect of this confirmation hearing was that the senators would basically debate with each other indirectly. So for instance, Senator Hirano and her points that she brought up, then the next senator, the Republican senator, would dispute those claims. They basically would say, you know, that's not true, and here's why, and blah, blah, blah. So it was back and forth, indirect debate between the two senators. And I kind of felt sorry for Judge Barrett, because she was literally in the middle of this, and she would sit there for long periods of times, not even saying anything, just kind of just listening to the senator talk and basically berate the opposite senator from the other side of the aisle. It was just like, is anybody going to ask her a question? Hi, did you forget that we're here for Judge Barrett and we're not here to, you know, push your own personal agenda? And that was especially evident on Senator Harris's part when she came on and was basically campaigning for her entire 30 minutes about, you know, how bad the Republicans are and heartless and, you know, we have to help the American people and yada, yada. And after a while, it's like, are you going to ask her a question? I mean, she probably talked 25 minutes before she ended up asking a question. And by then her time was nearly up. So it was just pathetic. It was just a pathetic show of power, you know, and I don't know. It was pretty interesting to watch them go back and forth. But and then something else that Judge Barrett thought that gave me a lot of thought, and I think bears repeating, is she talked about how every time she puts on that black robe, it signifies a neutral position, and she will approach precedents from a neutral position. So I thought that was an interesting take on the reason why the robes are black for judges, because it's supposed to signify that they are a neutral party and they are there to rule according to the law, not because she likes you or she hates you or she feels this way or that way. It's they're ruling based on the law. And if you want the law changed, that's the Congress's job to get in there and change those laws, which is one reason why it's so important to pay attention to what's going on in the political realm right now, because these people decide our future. And the judges, just they're there to interpret that law and to apply it according to that interpretation. So it was a really interesting process. That ate up probably about 3 or 4 days last week, where I sat down and watched several hours each night after getting off work. And it was just really interesting to me to see the process and the politics once again, and how you can't ever really get away from the politics. Everybody has an agenda, both sides, not just the left. And it's kind of a shame, because just as Judge Barrett was in the middle of this, I feel like the American people are also in the middle of this. And we, you know, we have a chance to vote them out, but we're also taking a gamble on whomever we vote in won't do a worse job. And it's just, I think that's one reason why everyone is so frustrated with politics, because we feel so powerless overall in trying to get anything done, because the officials that we elect never listen. So anyway, she'll probably get elected. I think that she has the necessary votes to be confirmed. So we'll see. I think that's supposed to happen this next week. They're supposed to come to a vote, and I'll be very surprised if she's not confirmed and made a Supreme Court justice. So transitioning back to writing, that's why I haven't gotten any writing done this past week, because I've been so distracted by the confirmation hearing. I think, though, that I've thought about this, and I know Abby Emin she really talks about doing scene cards and how that's very productive and helpful when you're writing your story. And I think I agree with her. I'm still going to try to outline as much as I can, but I can only outline to a point before I'm really not sure where to go with it, because I don't know what my characters are going to do. I don't really know my characters well enough to predict which way they're going to go with the story. I kind of like to let them make that decision as I'm writing it. So I think one reason I haven't gotten anything done on my writing this week is because I'm frustrated, and I've reached that point where I'm like, well, I'm not sure how to go forward. But I think with scene cards, that might help me move the story forward, at least give me enough material to write it so that I get a feel for where I'm going, and then, you know, continue to outline and plan from that point forward. Interestingly enough, I was hunting for some index cards, because I thought, well, I need some index cards to do some scenes. And I found another index card spiral notebook packet, whatever you want to call it, where I had done that very thing with another story that I completely forgot that I was going to write. I think it was actually for another one of my NaNoWriMo projects. And I was reading through them, I thought, this isn't half bad. So it's kind of motivated me to do the same thing with this story and make some scene cards out. And then I kind of rip them out and shuffle them up and kind of figure out which direction I want to take. And even if I'm not sure which direction I want to take, at least I have a scene that I can write to give myself the word count necessary to hopefully make it across that 50,000 word line. So that's something that I'm definitely going to be looking into this week, and writing up is some scene cards to help me get started with the story. I will post, I think if I haven't already done so, there's a video of Abby Emmons talking about her scene cards, and I thought it was really helpful. I'll try to post that on my blog this week if you guys are interested. And again, then my blog is writefromkaren.com, and that's W-R-I-T-E from Karen.com if you're interested in visiting. One side note about my blog, though, and I do apologize because it is so annoying. I guess because I'm getting more hits on my blog than WordPress is starting to put ads on my blog, and it's super annoying. So I am so sorry if you get to my blog and you're bombarded with a bunch of ads. It's especially annoying because I'm not getting any kickback for these ads. Though I do understand where WordPress is coming from, they have to pay the bills somehow. And I'm going to upgrade at some point when they have another sale and to get those ads off my blog because they're highly annoying, and I'm so sorry to put you through that. But until that sale comes along, it's a little expensive for me to purchase, to upgrade my plan just to get the ads off my blog. I'm having a hard time kind of justifying that decision. So when they have a sale, I'll do that. But until the sale happens, let me give you a little tip. If you are not already doing this, I highly recommend going to AdBlock and downloading that onto your computer. And that will block all of the ads that you see, not only on my blog, but it'll block the ads on YouTube and that kind of thing. Now, I know there are some people out there that are probably yelling, but wait, you know, this is how we get paid. Don't do that. And I get it. I do. So if you want to support like a YouTuber or a blogger, then turn it off for that website and just endure the ads, because that is how they make their money. And they work very hard to create this content for you to enjoy. So, you know, you might turn it off for people that you really want to support, because it really does make a huge difference. But in my case, where I'm not getting anything for these ads and they're just annoying and they're everywhere, my gosh, I turned it off on my site the other day and I think I had like 10 ads pop up, and I thought, this is ridiculous. So in the meantime, if you want to visit my blog and you don't want to mess with those stupid ads, you know, download the AdBlock app and it will do a very good job of blocking them and you won't have to worry about seeing them. So I'll post that scene cards video from Abby on there as well. And I'm also going to post an interesting scenario I came across. I think it's Bright Ideas YouTube channel. They have a lot of interesting what ifs scenarios and that kind of thing. And the one that I'm going to put on my blog talks about, what if you lost electricity and water? And they were talking about, you know, the impact that would have on people and how they might adapt to those hardships. And they basically have a rose-colored glasses approach that, you know, they would just adapt. They would start growing their own food. They would start figuring out how to capture rainwater for their own water, because water becomes terribly expensive, because it becomes a precious commodity, because no one can get the water. And I thought that was an interesting scenario. I don't think it's a realistic scenario. I think most likely what would happen is that people would lose their freaking minds and it would just become animals, where they would start looting and robbing people and potentially killing people because they're scared and they're desperate and, you know, they don't know what else to do because no one's been taught to think rationally about anything nowadays. It's all reactive and it's all about emotions, and that can get you into so much trouble, as we can see with all these riots that are happening around the country. So I thought that was an interesting take on a pretty desperate situation. I don't think realistically that would happen that way. I think it could get super, super ugly and dark before it would start getting better. But I bring this up because I think it's an interesting premise for a story, if you guys are looking for a story idea for your NaNoWriMo project. And so I'll post that video on my blog, and hopefully that'll give you some ideas on maybe how you can apply it to your story, or maybe it's just something that you would want to write about. You know, it's basically the end of the world kind of scenario. Now, in this video, it's never really explained why you've lost your electricity or your water. So that's another interesting aspect you could add to your story. You know, what happened? You know, why did the world change so drastically, so suddenly? So that's another interesting story idea if you're looking at that. So I'll put that on my blog as well if you want to watch it and potentially apply that to some of your own writing in the upcoming month. And speaking of NaNoWriMo, don't forget that I am on the NaNoWriMo website. My username is Take2Max. That's T-A-K-E, the number 2, Max, M-A-X. So if you want to look me up and friend me, I'd be happy to talk to you and chat away. And I also started a writing group on the NaNoWriMo site. It's called Write Away, W-R-I-T-E, Away. So if you want to become a member of that group, just message me and I'll be happy to get you in there. And I think it would be fun to have some writing buddies or a writing support group that we could kind of reference and talk about and get some encouragement from next month, because that's one of the biggest suggestions for being successful in the NaNoWriMo project, is having a writing buddy, someone that helps hold you accountable for your words and all that kind of stuff too. So if you're interested, look it up. NaNoWriMo website is, it's NaNoWriMo.org. That's the NaNoWriMo website, if you're interested in going on there and signing up and then looking me up, and maybe we could become writing buddies if you're interested. So anyway, so that's kind of an update with my writing, and hopefully I make some more progress on that this week. My nurse at work is on vacation, and so I'm anticipating this next week to be super busy for me, because I'm basically holding up my doctor's patients by myself, because we share that duty whenever she's here. But with her being gone all week, I have a feeling that's going to put a lot of extra work on me. So I don't know how much I'm going to actually get done with my writing, but we'll see. We'll see. Shifting gears again. I swear I'm going to get some transition music or some kind of noise to clue you in that I'm switching gears on you. On the personal note, we have finished our house. Our house looks great. Kevin's done painting it. It has kind of a golden. We meant to paint it more khaki, and our last color on our house was more of a silly putty color, if you can imagine how gross and ugly that might have been. But it had kind of a pinkish undertone. Not the prettiest color, I'm going to be honest. So we wanted to go with something a little more khaki colored this time. And the color we picked on the card anyway looked khaki, and it looked perfect for what we were wanting to do. But as usually the case, and I'm sure I don't have to tell you, for any of you DIYers out there that ever do any of your own painting, the color never really turns out the way you want it to or thought it was going to look like. So the color that's currently on our house is more golden than khaki. Kevin loves it. I'm meh. It's not the greatest, but it definitely lightens up our house, and it's definitely better than that silly putty color. But anyway, that part's done, and we finally finished scraping the windows yesterday, which we might have waited a little too long to finish that, because as the weather gets colder, it gets harder to scrape that paint off the windows. And he and I both went through, we both broke quite a few razor blades trying to get the paint off, but that is finally done. And I'm so glad, because today is cold and rainy, and that would have been even worse trying to get that off now. But all of that's done, thank goodness. We don't have to think about that anymore. It's been, I can check it off my list. It's something we've been wanting to do for the last few years, and it's finally done. And that will free up some more of my time on the weekend, so I can focus on getting my project ready for next month and doing some scene cards and potentially writing some background information on my characters and posting it on my blog. I make no promises. I would like to do that. I intend to do that, but I can't promise that I'm actually going to do that because I get so distracted by all the political videos and the commentaries and the articles. And I know, guys, I know. I'm a procrastinator. I'm a huge procrastinator. And I wouldn't say I have ADHD, but I do tend to get distracted easily. So especially when it comes to things that are hard, like writing. So I don't know. I'm trying to get better. I really am. And then on a personal front as well, just to kind of give you an idea of what's going on in my personal life, Kevin just had a couple of teeth pulled. That, so we were kind of getting through that last week as well. And he did really well, but of course, you know, it takes a little while to get over it. And so I was kind of distracted by that. And then our oldest son is now having teeth problems. He just recently went to the dentist, and he's going to have his wisdom teeth pulled. Apparently, the dentist said that he has a lot of cavities in his wisdom teeth, which I didn't even know that was possible. My own wisdom teeth never came in. I can feel them under the gums, but they never broke through. But his have broken through and they're giving him a lot of pain. So he is going to have to go to an oral surgeon, which I'm going to recommend the same oral surgeon that cut out Kevin's teeth and have his wisdom teeth removed. So anyway, so I don't know when that's going to happen, but that could potentially distract me from all the stuff that I need to do as well when it comes to this project for next month. Why is it that every time you need to do something and focus on something, everything under the sun comes up and distracts you from what you need to do? It's so frustrating. But anyway, so I'm glad he went to the dentist. I'm glad we finally know what's happening because he's not been able to eat sweets for a while. And every time he would, he said he'd pay for it for days on end. So I felt really bad for him, but I'm glad that we kind of have an idea of what's going on. So probably going to end up taking care of him through that process since he doesn't have a girlfriend or anything like that. It's just us. So I'm sure he'll be wanting us to kind of walk him through that process. So anyway, so that's kind of where I am right now, as far as personal life, and working life and writing life and what's going on, my thoughts on what's going on in the political realm right now. So I think I'm going to go ahead and end this. I don't want to take up too much of your time. I appreciate you guys listening, and I hope your week goes really well. And I hope if you're participating in NaNoWriMo that you are working away on prepping for it, or you have an idea. I'm trying to give you some ideas. I hope it's helpful. And I know that I get a lot of my inspiration by reading books and just watching writing-related videos. You can get a lot of great tips and tricks from watching and listening to other writers talk about their stuff. And anytime any kind of inspiration hits, be sure you've got a notebook close by or you write it down on your phone, because you'd be surprised. Ideas usually happen at the worst times. You're in the shower or you're driving or something where you can't just stop and make note of it. So anyway, have a great week, and I will talk to you guys next time. Bye.